Locker room. Why couldn't he just leave me alone? Didn't guys like him want something else? Or someone else? He was getting to me, making me think I was wrong about him or something. For years he'd had this whole what you see is what you get vibe, and now he wanted to convince the world that we were wrong. I didn't need the trouble. I had much bigger problems than him, and I didn't need this. I dressed, stopped at my locker to grab my bag, and before I knew it, I was halfway home already, lost in my thoughts and replaying every frame with him in my head. My throat swelled with a golf ball-sized lump, and I couldn't stop feeling his arms around me. It was nice. I didn't want to want more. Everything I said about him was true. He was shallow, and he was using me. Bottom line, I couldn't forget that. There was a moment, though, when he held me, where he was me and I was him, and we weren't alone. It felt like I was supposed to be there. I closed my eyes as I walked, tears wetting my lashes. I was looking for meaning where there wasn't any because I had nothing else. It wasn't real, and he didn't feel it, too. Remember that, Em. Don't forget it. For a few seconds, I saw what I wanted to see. Heading into the town square and up the small incline into the park, I gazed at my gazebo that I was building, the beams still wet from rain, but the smell intoxicating. I loved the smell of wood. Circling the structure, I saw it was still in pristine condition, my foundation holding up and no vandalism so far. Tires screeched on the street, and I looked over to see sticks crowded with people and four black vehicles racing up to parking spots on the curb, Will's truck bed loaded with people. Tires peeled, smoke billowing into the air, and people shouted as car stereos blared.
"How's it going?"
I looked over my shoulder, seeing Trevor Crist holding a football. He tossed it back to his buddy down on the sidewalk. "Hey," I muttered, looking back at sticks. Will climbed out of the driver's side, grabbing the black T-shirt out of the back of his jeans and pulling it on as Damon came up behind him and appeared to be whispering something in his ear. I couldn't see their faces. People cleared the sidewalk as they crossed it, walking into sticks.
"Look at it this way," I heard Trevor say. "Once they graduate, Devil's Night is dead. Thank fucking God, right?"
I turned to him. "Not going to carry on the family tradition?" Trevor was 3 years behind his brother Michael. Plenty of time left in high school. But he just scoffed.
"You mean the once-a-year beef fest where my brother and his friends get the whole town to suck their cocks because they're too stupid to remember how to be men the other 364 days of the year?"
He shook his head.
"No."
I snorted. I may have misjudged him. The silver spoon in his mouth was salty.
"When everyone grows up and realizes they're nothing," he continued, "I'll laugh and celebrate then. Or when they finally get arrested for all the dumb shit they pull."
"Some brother you are," he shrugged, but I smiled a little. He might not be so bad after all. And I understood where he was coming from. I wouldn't cry if my brother got into a little trouble. In the distance, Will took out a cell phone as he stepped into the hangout, looking like he was filming a couple of guys roughhousing. "That is true, though, isn't it?" I thought out loud. "About the risk of getting arrested, I mean. They film everything with that phone. It's pretty careless." Trevor followed my gaze, everyone knowing that the horsemen recorded their escapades. There was proof of all the petty crimes and pranks they'd pulled. "If anyone had half a mind to," I went on, "there would be no way to ignore their behavior if someone shared those videos in the right place. You know, can you imagine the embarrassment? The places they'd robbed, vandalized, the underage girls, maybe guys too, or, hey, maybe there were even married women on that phone. The town would go crazy." He was silent for a moment, and when I looked back at him, his gaze was still on the crowd in sticks, but his expression was serious as the wheels in his head turned.
"They're too comfortable in their surroundings, that's for sure," he added.
I nodded. False sense of safety and all that. They took video, probably pictures too, because they knew they were invincible. Even if anyone found it, would it amount to any more than a slap on the wrist and some very embarrassed parents? Money solved all problems. Trevor still stood there, gazing after them in the billiards hall. "Learn a lesson from this," I told him. "Don't document your shit. The internet lives forever." "Got it." But I didn't think he heard me as he absently nodded.
"See ya,"
he said, finally turning away and heading back to his friend.
I gazed across the street, hearing the music from here, and knowing I'd made the right decision. I wouldn't belong in there with them. Could you imagine? Me? Like, having fun? I'd be wondering what the point was the whole time. I couldn't not be serious. And he was never serious. Turning, I picked up my bag, but the flap flew open, and I spotted a packet of papers inside. Pulling them out, I turned it over and saw Lolita Study Guide written on the front. Huh? I mumbled. I'd looked everywhere for this, including this bag, both of my lockers, my house, the garbage. What the hell? But as I looked over the packet, my name written at the top, I saw the questions already completed. All of them. Neat block lettering in pencil. I flipped through, inspecting every page and reading every answer, seeing that it was all completed. The answers impressive, even for me, although a couple of the responses kind of pissed me off. I dropped my hands, staring off. I thought for sure Godzilla in the granola bar was Will, but this was snuck into my locker as well, and it was done tonight. This wasn't in my bag before I went swimming. There was no way he'd done this, unless he buttered up a girl to do it for him. It did look like a guy's penmanship, though. I raised my eyes, making out his black t-shirt and chocolate-colored hair as he stood near a pool table inside Styx. He wouldn't have to look for me, because I had a question that needed answering. See you on the bus tomorrow night, Will Grayson. Chapter 9. Emery. Present. I blinked my eyes open, the blurry room in front of me slowly coming into view. The weight of a truck sat on my back, and I rolled myself over, peeling my face off the pillow. My arm draped over the other half of the empty bed. It was just a dream. I stared at the ceiling, still feeling him next to me in bed, but I knew he wasn't there. He was closer than ever now, but I felt his absence more than I ever did. Tears ached behind my eyes, remembering how he felt and how much I really wanted to feel that again right now. He barely looked at me yesterday. He always looked at me. God, who put me in black church? My brother wouldn't have the clout for this. I'd heard he'd married, but it had been years since I'd seen him. Why now? No, it had to be someone else. Someone who wanted to give Will his revenge and didn't give a shit about me. There were lots of possibilities. Sitting up, I winced at the soreness in my stomach, and I reached out, tonguing the cut on my lip. It was funny, and I wasn't sure why, but I didn't mind the pain. I actually kind of liked it. It was familiar. It reminded me that I was alive. Strange as it was the past several years, free and on my own, I hadn't felt that in a long time. Climbing out of bed, I found my glasses on the nightstand and slipped them on, looking down at my boxers and tank top. Iden had undressed me when he put me to bed, offering me some bottoms from his drawer. I looked around the room, not sure where he'd slept, but he'd stayed out after he patched me up last night. Walking to the mirror, I turned and looked at myself. My hair had coiled and ratted, wild and messy, as it fell around my face and down my chest and arms. Dried blood coated my left nostril, and the skin on the inside corner of my right eye was purple. My cheek was red from where he'd slapped me. A cut adorned my bottom lip, and a white bandage was wrapped around my upper right arm. Reaching out, I touched my reflection in the mirror, feeling it, remembering. Every hair on my arms rose. Every inch of my skin hummed. The air coursed through my fingers, and the muscles in my legs flexed, standing tall and strong. I curled my fingers into the mirror, alive. I was a fighter once. Closing my eyes, I flattened my hand against the mirror once more, feeling warmth from the other side. Were one of them in there keeping an eye on me? Was Will in there?
Hi, someone said.
I opened my eyes and turned toward the door, seeing Micah stand there in black cargo pants, his hands full of stuff. I backed away from the mirror, grabbing the sheet on the bed to cover myself, as he entered the room in his bare feet.
Some clothes,
he said, gesturing to the pile in his left hand. And then he set down a plate.
And in case you're hungry.
I looked at the juice, fruit, a small baguette, and a wedge of what looked like brie, my stomach growling. Iden had soup brought up to me last night, but I couldn't remember the last time I ate anything substantial, and I was starving. Dropping the sheet, I grabbed the bread, broke it in half, and cut off some cheese with the butter knife, smearing it on the bread. Lifting it to my mouth, I ripped off a piece with my teeth and chewed. Jesus! My mouth salivated, and I almost felt nauseous at the taste because I was so hungry. I groaned, loading on more cheese and then drinking the juice.
"You want a bath?" he asked.
I looked over as he pulled his t-shirt over his head, his abs flexing and his hair hanging in his eyes, all messy sexy. I choked, coughing with my mouth full. "With you?" He just chuckled, stuffing his t-shirt into his back pocket.
"I'll draw you one. You look rough," he explained. "How do you feel?"
I opened my mouth to say fine or I'm hanging in there, but surprisingly I just nodded. "Good." I took another bite and stuffed a piece of apple in too. I felt good. Weird. Walking to the tub in the corner of the room, that wasn't in the bathroom, maybe because the previous owner of the house liked his wife to bathe in full view of the bed, he started the water, dipping his hand in the stream and adjusting the temperature.
"Rory told me what you did," he said,
sitting on the edge of the tub and looking over at me.
"Thank you."
I'd seen enough in my 24 hours here to know all wasn't what it seemed. Rory was the one who'd spoken in the cellar yesterday, the one who didn't want me here, hoped I'd die out there, and liked things just as they were because he had all he needed here. "Are you and him?" I didn't finish, just letting him figure it out. He smiled and looked back at the water, but I caught the blush on his face. I ate some more fruit and the rest of the bread before finishing the juice he'd brought me. Everything tasted so good, probably because I knew it was safe. If they'd wanted to drug me, they could have already done it. "What time is it?" I asked.
"Maybe noon."
He shrugged.
"I don't know. Time isn't relevant here."
I wiped my mouth with the napkin, studying him. "Do you know how long you've been here?"
"A little over a year, judging by how many times the crew comes to restock us and clean," he told me. "We've all been here a while. Rory was the last to show up, about 7 months ago."
No clocks, no calendars, no connection to the life outside. The only way to count the months was to count the resupplies. It was like constantly waiting for something you weren't sure would ever happen, much less when. "You don't seem like you should be here," I told him. He scooped some bath salts into the tub, and I pulled a towel and washcloth over from the nearby table. With Stalin's Moreau as a father, I thought Maiko would be different. He stared at the water.
"My father hasn't been seen in public in 9 years, he explained. "He lives on a yacht that's constantly moving from port to port, and the only way my 5 brothers and sister can see him is when we take a helicopter to follow whatever coordinates he sends us."
I'd heard that somewhere. It was actually pretty smart. When you supplied weapons to terrorists and competing factions in third world countries, upsetting the consistency of the tyranny already in power, many people would want you dead.
"People think wealth means choice and freedom," he continued. "But oh, how I envied those filthy barefoot kids running around some of the worst neighborhoods I drove through growing up."
He looked up at me finally.
"It's nice not starving, but I don't want to live like he does. I don't want power. I don't give a shit about money. I've had it, and now I'd just rather have peace of mind."
I approached him. "So you're the black sheep?" He flashed a sad smile.
"Who needs to learn a lesson about family loyalty and not being a pussy?"
He recited his father's words, no doubt. So we were all stuck here. Maybe I wasn't so alone then. Keeping my bottoms and top on, I stepped into the tub, the hot water instantly spreading amazing, glorious chills all over my body. He smiled at my attempt at modesty by keeping my clothes on, but I really just wasn't ready for him to leave. I sat down, letting my eyes fall closed at how good the water felt. Taking the bait, he tipped my head back and water poured over my scalp, wetting my hair as he filled the cup and did it again and again. I opened my eyes, looking at the mirror across the room as water cascaded down my back, over my chest, and soaked my tank top. "What happens when the resupply team shows up?" I broached.
"They resupply?"
"Yeah, duh. You know what I mean," I told him. "If I were stuck here for the time being, I'd use that time wisely. I needed to map the house, explore the land, and start stocking food, water, and maybe another weapon." Micah held up his wrist, showing me his bronze-colored bracelet. I studied it, just realizing they all wore one.
It hadn't struck me yesterday, but now that I was seeing it, I remembered they all had one on.
It tracks us, he said, and it doesn't come off. Believe me, we all try.
I didn't have one, though.
It vibrates when the team is coming, he explains. Security arrives first, and if we're in our rooms like good little boys, they simply flip a lock to keep us secure. If we're not, then they'll find us and lock us in our rooms themselves. When the doors open again, they're gone. The fridge is stocked, the toilets are clean, our wardrobe is replenished, and every piece of furniture is shining. Almost like we get a do-over every month.
A whole new chance to not break, spill, or bleed all over the floors again, huh?
He snorted. Yeah.
Can you talk to them when they arrive?
We can try.
He removed the now-soaked bandage on my arm.
But ultimately, the ones in charge aren't the ones we see. The team is just doing a job.
He soaped up a washcloth and gently cleaned off the blood on my arm.
And while Aiden is correct that you should stay put because you won't make it out of here alive,
he went on,
I wouldn't trust that they'll be the ones to save you when they come.
I tensed. Why do you say that?
Well, they had to have noticed you being brought here in the first place, right?
My heart skipped a beat, and I paused, thinking. It was safe to assume they saw me brought in or helped bring me in. He was right. If Aiden didn't lock me in the cellar and keep me undetected like he'd threatened to do, they might not care anyway when they came in a month. They still might not rescue me. Like I said, he repeated, it's a job. Well, I wasn't going to sit here and do nothing. Someone had an agenda bringing me here, and it wasn't Will. I looked over at the glass again, imagining he was watching as Micah slipped the cloth inside my tank top and washed my back. How do they know when you're fit to go home? I asked. I mean, people have gone home since you've been here, right?
One, he said, but he got sent back.
The floor creaked, and I tipped my head up, seeing Rory lean against the doorframe, watching us as he ate an apple. His gaze moved between Micah and me, something loaded happening between them.
And I wasn't unhappy about it, Micah added,
humor in his voice as he looked at the other man. I glanced between them, the vibe making my blood warm. I was pretty sure these two just might be happy staying here for the rest of their lives if they had each other. Would Rory mind if you helped me with my hair? I asked Micah. He grinned, kind of devilishly, and picked up the shampoo, pouring some into his hand. I closed my eyes as he spread it across my hair, lathering it up, and I knew Rory was watching us, as I imagined Will watching me through the glass. I let my head fall back, and he poured water over my scalp again and again as it rinsed my hair and coursed down my body. The fabric of the white tank top chafed the hard points of my nipples. His fingers trailed down my hair, squeezing the water out, and I almost shivered, it felt so good. All I could feel were the eyes behind the glass on me, and I gripped the sides of the tub, liking it.
I think I better go, Micah finally said.
I opened my eyes to Rory, still leaning against the doorframe, but he'd stopped eating and stared at Micah, his gaze piercing.
He needs me more than you do right now, Micah joked.
My thighs hummed. Damn. Thank you, I sighed, not ready to give up the attention, but I totally understood.
Anytime.
He walked toward the door, his t-shirt still dangling out of his back pocket, and then he turned to close the door.
Oh, and the gift is from Aiden, he said, pointing to the floor next to the tub.
I peered over the edge, finding an old rectangular wooden case, and picked it up, opening the rusted clasp. Flipping the lid, I saw mechanical pencils, a French curve, a T-square, an eraser, a compass. I darted my gaze to Micah. These were drawing tools.
You can walk freely about the house, he told me. No one is to touch you, Aiden says.
And then he smiled, adding,
unless you invite us to.
He closed the door, Rory's laugh echoing down the hall. Chapter 10. Emery. 9 years ago. 500 pairs of feet stomped the bleachers, cheering their respective teams, and I watched Will shoot another two-pointer from the top of the key. Howls filled the air as the ball fell through the net, and we raised our instruments, playing a few notes to celebrate the moment. Elle's arm pressed into mine, and I shifted to keep my balance.
The whole place was packed, and I looked across the court to Mauro Sanz's cheer section, seeing it filled with a lot more girls than guys. It was funny how good-looking basketball players could suddenly spark an interest in just about anything for teenage girls. Everyone was a basketball fan now. The center passed the ball to Michael Crist, and he dribbled it, running the rest of the way down the court, passing it to Damon Torrance. Damon caught it and bounced it up and down on the floor, two girls waving to him to where he stood in the wing. He shot the ball, and it bounced off the rim, spilling over. Will caught it, jumped up, and dunked it, the buzzer blaring through the auditorium as it fell through. I smiled, catching the sight of his grin. Everyone was a basketball fan now. Cheers filled the room, and I glanced at the scoreboard. 59-65, Thunder Bay, a close call. The coaches and players on the bench swarmed the floor, and I lifted my flute as everyone else raised their instruments. We belted out the school song, all the attendees on our side singing along. I watched Will, smiling as he hung on to his friends as the auditorium echoed with noise, chatter, and music, celebrating the win. Not that I cared. I barely ever paid attention, only knowing it was my moment when the others around me stood up or readied their instruments. Will pulled off his shirt, sweat glistening on his back and darkening his chocolate hair as he swung the shirt over his shoulder and nodded to whatever some guy from the opposing team was saying to him. I let my eyes trail down his spine. I paid attention to the game tonight, though. He was good, and he was fun to watch. I followed the rest of the band off the bleachers as everyone started to clear the gym, and we made our way into a spare room to put our instruments away. But then some girl yelled, "Emmy, catch!" And I spun around just as a cup of something ice cold crashed into my chest. I sucked in a breath as cola spilled down my navy and white uniform, seeping through my pants, down my legs, and coating my flute. I shot my eyes up. "Are you kidding me?" Maisie Voss hung over the railing of the bleachers, feigning a look of surprise before breaking into a laugh. "I thought you were the trash," she explained, jogging down the bleachers and rounding them to approach me. "I mean, you clear our trash at school, so I thought you'd help me out here. That's what I meant. Sorry." Air poured in and out of my lungs, but I still couldn't catch my breath. She did that on purpose. Elle stopped at my side, gaping, while others tiptoed around us, laughing under their breaths. A couple of guys followed Maisie, all seniors at my school, and I wanted to spew every dirty word in the book at them and their stupid faces. But I just swallowed it down, because if not, then they'd win. They'd know that they mattered. This was just my weekly reminder that I wasn't one of them.
"What's going on?"
Will said, coming through the crowd with his shirt still hanging over his shoulder. Maisie bit back her grin, while the two guys she was with made no effort to hide their amusement. Will looked me up and down as the soda dripped off my clothes and flute, and then he turned his narrowed eyes on the two guys.
"Cover me," he gritted out.
They stopped laughing, and I watched as Michael, Damon, and Kai took up position, surrounding Will as he stepped up to Hardy Reed and Silas Betchell. The two boys straightened, looking suddenly uncomfortable, and no one said anything as the horseman shielded Will's body from our view. What? I looked around Michael to try to see what was happening, but all I could catch was Will staring into Silas's and Hardy's eyes, doing something with his hands, but I couldn't see what. Then Will froze, blinked once, and I heard it. The steady stream, almost like something was being ripped in a slow, constant line. A wicked smile spread across Damon's lips as Silas squeezed his eyes shut, and Hardy's chest moved up and down faster as he turned his head away and cursed under his breath.
"Son of a bitch."
But whatever Will was doing, they stood there and took it. After a moment, Will shifted again, never breaking eye contact as the horsemen backed away and Silas and Hardy came into full view. The whole place erupted in hoots and laughter. My eyes fell, seeing the streams of piss wetting their jeans all the way down to their shoes, and Maisie dropped her eyes, heat rising to her cheeks as everyone made fun of her boyfriend standing there in a mess. I clenched my teeth. They weren't fucking laughing now. Will bent down and swiped the cup off the floor and tossed it in the trash, but before he could meet my eyes, I spun around to leave. The muscles in my throat ached as I struggled to keep back the tears. But someone shouted behind me again, "Emmy, here!" I tensed, but then a cheerleader rushed up and dug inside her backpack, taking out some clothes and handing them to me. Band came here in our uniforms. I didn't have anything to change into. I was tempted to toss it back at her and choke on my pride, but Martin would drill me if I came home like this. I nodded once in thanks. I'll bring them back Monday. And I made my way for the bathroom to wipe up and change. My chin trembled. Everything threatening to spill over, and I didn't know why. Stuff like that had happened before. It was no big deal. It wasn't like it happened all the time. I could have shoved Maisie if I wanted to, yelled at her, maybe, definitely bit back a little. This time I just wanted to run. I didn't want anyone to see me, like I was so embarrassing I wanted to erase myself from people's memories and cease to exist. Just disappear. I cleaned and stashed my flute, changed clothes, and stuck in my earbuds, carrying my instrument and bag to the bus. It was an hour drive back to Thunder Bay, and I wished I could damn well walk it. Hanging my head, I charged toward the back of the vehicle, slid into an empty seat, and dumped my case and clothes on the floor. I held my phone in my hand, my playlist on Teenage Witch, as I stared out the window. People passed me, quiet and not a snicker to be heard, because Will Grayson had cast his net, letting them all know I was off limits. It was actually okay. Scared or not, most of them were going to sit down next to me anyway. They never did. The bus filled up, and I waited for the seat next to me to dip, but as the doors closed, the lights dimmed, and the engine started. I remained solo. I chewed the corner of my mouth to hide the tremble. What did I care? What did it matter that I'd been humiliated again? What did it matter that he saw that in the gym? The tears welled. He saw me. He saw that happen to me. He saw what the whole world thought of me, and now he... A hand slipped under mine, warm and smooth, and I snapped my head left, seeing Will in the seat next to me. What? A lump filled my throat as I gaped at the side of his face, wanting to be raging mad that he was there and touching me again without my permission, but he curled his fingers, gripping me, and it took a moment to get a hold of myself. Finally, I forced a scowl and yanked my hand away. Or tried to. He wouldn't let go or look at me. He just tossed his black hoodie over our hands and chatted to the guy in the next seat like I wasn't here. My heart pounded in my ears, drowning out the music from my earbuds, and I had to force my breathing to slow down. I closed my eyes and turned toward the window. Why was he doing this? And why was I just sitting here? The warmth from his strong fingers seeped into mine as he held me, and I looked over at him again, seeing him slouched in the seat, long legs stretched into the aisle as the players, cheerleaders, and band carried on around us. He just stared at his phone now like there was nothing going on underneath the hoodie between us, like he wasn't completely aware that he was holding me. It took three tries, but I eventually swallowed, wetting my dry throat as I pulled his sweatshirt over us more, making sure our hands were covered. Maybe he thought I didn't want anyone to see. Maybe he didn't want anyone to see. Either way, I didn't care anymore. The bus jostled side to side, taking us back onto the highway, and I fisted my hand, too, a fire burning low in my belly at the feel of his skin. Movement caught my eye ahead, but I didn't look up because I knew what it was. Desi Castro sat in our center's lap, reverse cowgirl. And through the dim moonlight and shadows, I was pretty sure they were being fairly fucking stupid, albeit quietly, in the seat in front of us. Her long red locks draped over the back of the seat, and I finally raised my eyes as she leaned back against him, their lips barely touching as their bodies moved slow but rhythmic in the darkness. Will rubbed his thumb across my finger, and my stomach flipped, the gesture comforting. My phone beeped, and I turned over my right hand, unlocking the screen with my thumb. The phone lit up my place by the window, rain pummeling the bus as we drove through the dark night. "Let me take you home," it read. I clicked my music off, glancing over and seeing his phone in his hand too, the same text visible. "No," I typed back. I couldn't let him take me home. Not ever. I tried to pull away from his hand, but he clasped it tightly. "Let me take you home," he typed again. I clenched my teeth and turned my eyes out the window. I tried to pull my hand away once more, but he grasped it, forcing it instead onto my thigh, his fingers grazing my skin there. A bolt of lightning shot through me, but instead of being angry, butterflies swarmed in my stomach and I squeezed my eyes shut, leaving him there. My phone beeped, and it took a moment to look at it.
"I want to hold you like that," it said.
I glanced up at Miller and Desi again, his arms wrapped around her, and I pictured myself in Will's lap, parked off some dark road in the rain, and it took everything I had not to look at him, because if I did, he'd know. He would know that I didn't always hate him. A sliver of my brain was starting to believe there was more to him. But I shoved his hand off, biting the corner of my mouth to keep the emotions away. "Cops came to the warehouse and took all the tappers," someone said loud enough to pierce my earbuds. I turned my head enough to see a cheerleader, Lindley Hoffman, across the aisle, looking back at Will. He sat there, his hand still under the hoodie, acting like everything was completely normal.
"Oh, yeah?"
he said. But he didn't give a shit. Lindley shot me a look, narrowing her eyes and lifting her chin, because if they found out there was a party, it was because I had told my brother, right? As if the cops had to be geniuses to figure out a win always equaled a kegger at the warehouse. Duh. I turned up the volume on my music again, drowning out any other sounds and tapped my thumbs, typing out a message. "Take her home. She'll drool all over your dumb haircut and extensive knowledge of microbrews and penis jokes." I mean, he was a jock. I felt him shake with a laugh next to me. He typed, letters flashing on his screen.
"I take you home, or I take you in my lap right here. Decide."
I ground my teeth together. Everyone would see that. If my brother heard about it, I'd... Jesus. Damon leaned up from behind us, squeezing Will's shoulders and talking in his ear. Will laughed at whatever he said, no one the wiser. My phone beeped again.
"Almost there," he warned.
I shook my head. "People will see," I typed out.
"Then make sure they don't."
He pulled the hoodie off us and slipped it over his head, covering his white, sleeveless t-shirt and his tan, toned, beautiful arms that always made my mouth hang open like an imbecile. We entered Thunder Bay, heading back to our campus where everyone would pick up their cars and head to parties, but I'd be walking and heading straight home, as always. I stared out the window, seeing the village breeze past, the twinkle lights of the park, and my neighborhood before we got up into the cliffs where Will and the wealthy resided. Part of me wanted it. Part of me loved how good his attention felt, because he was cocky and confident and good-looking and smooth. He was popular, looked great in everything he wore, and I liked his smile. He was untouchable, and he wanted to touch me. Tonight, anyway. My eyes dropped to my lap. Even if I wanted to, though, my brother would never tolerate it. The phone vibrated in my hand once, and then again and again, but I just bobbed my head to the music like I didn't notice. The school came into view, and liquid heat rushed my chest, but I ignored it. I was almost out of here, and he could spend the rest of the night taking whomever he wanted home, for all I cared. We were nothing. Another text came in, and I finally looked.
"When the bus stops, get in my fucking truck."
I breathed out a bitter laugh. Aw, someone's lost his temper. "Why?" I asked. And the next thing I know, the bus stopped. He yanked the earbuds out of my ears, and I sucked in a breath as he leaned into my face.
"Because you're mine,"
he growled in a whisper. And all at once, the horsemen rose from their seats, grabbed their bags, and charged down the aisle, leaving the bus first. My heart hammered. What the? Seriously?
"Because you're mine."
I ignored the flutter in my chest as I grabbed my bag and fumbled for my dangling earbuds. I mean, for Christ's sake, what was his deal? Was I on some scavenger hunt he was doing or something? Nail the nerd. I rose with everyone else and stepped into the aisle, getting ready to leave the bus. "I'm not yours, Will Grayson, and I'll walk. Thanks." The bus emptied, engines out in the parking lot already firing up and headlights glowing in the night. I walked to the undercarriage to see if anyone needed help with their equipment, but it was empty already. the band and players quickly clearing out. I turned to bolt and make my escape before he saw me, but Elle clasped my hand.
"We're getting a ride home," she said.
"Huh? Will?" Elle explained, pulling me along. "He's taking us home."
No.
I yanked my hand away. "He's not."
"You don't want me riding alone with him, do you?"
She planted her hands on her hips. "A mature guy, used to getting what he wants?"
"Then you shouldn't have agreed to it."
Pivoting back around, I headed toward the gates to go home.
"But tomorrow I can say I rode in his truck,"
she whined, jogging up to the side of me. "So? No." He was only offering to give her a ride because it included me. It would only encourage him. Elle fell back, and I kept walking.
"It's nice to be nice, Emmy," she called after me. "Please?"
I slowed, her pathetic whine making me feel guilty. I stopped and rolled my eyes, sighing. Him giving her a ride would make her year. And who was I kidding? He wasn't going to give up if I refused a ride tonight. The creepy stalker weirdo would follow me in that damn truck, right up to my front door. I turned around, seeing her already heading back into the parking lot, a morose slump to her shoulders.
"Wait,"
I bit out. She spun around, smiling ear to ear. I joined her again, and we both walked over to Will's truck, still parked. "You're sitting up front," she told me. "My house is first."
"Huh?"
But she shoved me at the door of the huge black Ford Raptor and pulled open the back door, climbing into the truck before I could utter an argument.
"Seriously?"
I yanked open the door and stepped up into the truck, ignoring Will's eyes as I plopped my ass down and slammed the door. But just then, the back door opened again, and I shot a glance over my shoulder, watching Elle quickly exit the truck again and close the door.
"What are you?"
She walked past my window, swinging around and moving backward as she winked at me. "Have a safe ride," she sing-songed, doing a taunting little wave.
"What the..."
I stopped breathing as realization dawned. This was a trick.
Damn it.
The locks clicked. The parking lot still swarmed with people, and I was officially done for the day, shaking my head as I watched her disappear into the crowd. "That's what I get for trying to make a friend," I grumbled. I pulled my seatbelt on, glaring over at Will as a smile curled his lips, and he started the engine. So clever, wasn't he? Must have worked that out with her in the 30 seconds it took for me to get off the bus. He pulled ahead, driving through the empty space ahead of us, and exited the parking lot, turning up the volume as "In Your Room" played on the stereo. We drove down the road, heading back toward the village, and I clasped my hands in my lap as my bag and flute sat on the floor. It smelled good in here. The leather seats cooled the backside of my thighs, and my stomach dropped a little as he went over the bumps and dips. The darkness of the cab engulfed us, hiding us, and it felt private, like we were alone somewhere we shouldn't be. Sneaking a glance, I watched his long fingers drape over the T of the steering wheel, and then looked up to his face, seeing his eyes narrowed on the road ahead and the unusually stern expression on his face. His chest rose and fell, steady and controlled. And if there was one thing I knew about Will Grayson III, it was that when he was in control, you should worry. Like in the pool last night. When he got serious, he got to me. I looked back down at my lap, breathing hard and feeling a little sick because my body was raging with a lot of different things. I liked it. We crawled closer to my house, and he hadn't said a word, but I didn't care. I just soaked up the feeling for as long as I could. Feeling him next to me, riding with him, the goosebumps on my legs, because I felt kind of pretty in the skirt now. Did he like it? He turned onto my street, and I clutched the hem of my shirt, seeing my house ahead, but I didn't want to leave him. He drove too fast, though. Why was he driving so fast? He had to stop in a second. But we passed my house, not stopping or even slowing, and I popped my head up, looking back at my place through his back window. He maintained speed, not slowing as my house came and went, disappearing again. I swallowed the lump in my throat, despite my heart leaping a little. "You have to take me home," I said. "I can't be late." I couldn't muster any more than a soft voice because I really didn't want to go home. I just knew I had to. Finally, he glanced over at me.
"What are you afraid will happen? You're good at saying no to me, right?
You can stay with me for another hour.
I arched a brow. What the hell was he going to try that would make me need to say no? I checked the clock on the dash. It was only 9:19. As long as I was home by 10, Martin probably wouldn't ask questions. Probably. He would know the bus had arrived already, though. Will drove us through the neighborhood and pulled onto Old Point Road, heading toward Adventure Cove. I tensed. What was he up to? The place closed at 8, and there was nothing else out here. He turned and pulled into the parking lot of the theme park, the whole place empty for the night. He stopped the truck, not really bothering to fit into any particular space, but he kept the engine running and turned down the radio. I let my eyes trail around the deserted lot, the empty ticket booths and darkened rides looming beyond the entrance gates. One single overhead light shone on the parking lot. I looked at him out of the corner of my eye as he leaned back in his seat, staring out the window as the weight of the silence made my heart skip a beat.
"Do you see the Ferris wheel?" he finally asked.
I followed his gaze, looking out my window and finding the Ferris wheel to the right, on the edge of the theme park.
"If you head past it," he said, "about 500 yards east, you'll come to Cold Point."
Cold Point was a part of the cliffs that jutted out into the sea a little more than the rest of the coastline between here and Falcon's Well. With the theme park in the way, it was nearly inaccessible now, and for good reason, given its history.
"Do you know that story?" he asked me.
"Murder-suicide," I muttered. He was quiet, and then I heard his soft,
"Maybe."
I turned my eyes to him as he leaned his head on his hand and stared ahead.
"In 1954, Edward McClanahan was my age," he told me. "Senior, basketball star, bit of a bad boy, but only where it counted."
He smiled, teasing me.
"He was good to people. He showed up for people, you know?"
I didn't know much about Edward McClanahan, other than the basketball team made an annual pilgrimage to his grave. I never really cared, but I stayed quiet.
"That season was supposed to be their greatest," he said. "They had the team, the coach, the years of training. They could anticipate each other's moves, even their thoughts."
He met my eyes.
"That's what years of playing together had brought them to. They were a family. More than family. They were in perfect symbiosis."
Like the horsemen. Watching them sometimes, the other players didn't exist. Michael, Kai, Damon, and Will were like the four limbs of a single body.
"And that rarely happens," he continued. "They relied on each other and would do anything for each other, and they were going all conference. Everyone was hyped for what was coming that season. The games, the parties, the celebrations."
I wondered how true all of that was. He painted a nice picture, but we believe what it suits us to believe, and nothing more. Everything seemed better in hindsight. He smiled.
"Elvis had just hit the scene. Everyone wanted a Chevy Bel Air, and Shaboom by the Crew Cuts was a number one song in America."
His face fell a little, and he continued.
"Homecoming night, a girl from Falcon's Well, one of our rivals, showed up at our high school dance, alone and wearing a pink dress of lace and tulle. The twinkle lights above the dance floor glittered across her hair and bare shoulders as she walked in, and no one could take their eyes off her. She was so nervous, knowing she didn't belong there."
He paused, turning his head and holding my eyes.
"Feeling like a mouse in a snake pit. She kept holding her stomach like she was going to throw up or something. But she was pretty, so pretty. He couldn't take his eyes off of her."
McClanahan. I looked off, past the Ferris wheel and toward Cold Point, seeing her in my head. The strapless pink dress that poofed out the way dresses in the 50s did, while young men wore suits.
"They say she came to cause trouble," he told me, his soft, low voice drifting into my ear. "That the rival team sent her to sow discord. They say she taunted our whole team, tried to get them to do things to her that night so she could play the victim the next day."
Why was he telling me this?
"No one knows how they knew where to find the body, or if she even screamed. But she was found through the morning fog hours later, broken on the jagged rocks below," he said, "her pink dress stained red, and the waves plastering her hair to the stones as her dead eyes stared up at the cliff above. The last thing she saw was the person who pushed her."
I tried to lick my lips, but my mouth was too dry.
"They say the team was going to have to forfeit the season under all the media scrutiny and investigation."
He drew in a long breath and exhaled.
They say all the guys who didn't come from wealthy families were going to have to forego their hopes of athletic scholarships because of it. They wouldn't go to college. He paused. They say the coach would have to be fired and move his family. The prospects of finding another job after such a scandal, not high.
I didn't know all that. I listened as he went on.
All I know is... He sighed. A week later, Edward McClanahan left a confession on his parents' kitchen table and then followed her over the cliff. The last line of the confession read, "We want what we want."
I turned my eyes on him as sweat cooled my pores. We want what we want.
They say McClanahan sacrificed himself so the season could go on.
Like he took the blame? He didn't do it?
That's what they say anyway, he mused,
a gleam hitting his eyes.
But the whispers tell of something else.
A flutter hit my stomach, and I barely breathed, waiting for him to continue.
They say she was caught between two best friends, McClanahan, who was in love with her, and AP, her boyfriend. He wasn't wealthy like McClanahan, but he was clever and ambitious, not someone to be underestimated.
My interest piqued even more. A mystery. I liked mysteries.
They say she was pregnant, he told me. They say she jumped.
And then he looked at me again.
They say Edward didn't.
Didn't jump? So the rumors say Edward was pushed instead? A smile played on his lips.
They say the note on the kitchen table was a confession, but not his.
He took another breath and looked out the front windshield again. Everyone revered Edward because they thought he took the fall to save the team's season, save some kids their college scholarships, and a coach his job. I always thought it was moronic. Edward clearly didn't understand all that life could throw at you. He had far bigger things to survive than a scandal. But I liked the way Will told it, like nothing was what it seemed, and there was a story waiting to be unearthed. After all, no one really knew what happened out at the Point all those decades ago.
I like it here, he almost whispered. I like mystery. Sometimes I'm dying to know what happened that night, and other times, I hope I never find out. Because it's more interesting this way. Reality always disappoints.
He turned to me.
I think that's why I've always liked this time of day best. People hide in the dark. They quench their thirsts in the dark. They build their secrets in the dark. We're more ourselves here than anywhere else. I get to be me.
He swallowed, staring at me.
When nightfall is coming.
I gazed into his dark green eyes, his whole face enshadowed in the cab of the truck, and I wanted... Every nerve on my lips hummed, feeling the weight between us like each end of a string tied around him and me, and it kept getting shorter. I want...
We want what we want,
he whispered. I dropped my eyes to my lap, fisting my hands. And then his voice came again, barely audible.
Come here,
he said. My heart dipped into my belly, and I could feel him in my hands. I looked at him, seeing him grind the steering wheel under his fist and breathing hard.
Come here,
he said again. I absently shook my head. Why?
Because I'm your man.
My heart cracked and splintered, aching with the warmth of those stupid words. Who the hell was he, huh? He didn't get to decide that someone belonged to him just because it struck his fancy. And that's all I was, a passing fancy. He didn't listen, and he didn't take no for an answer. If I let this happen, let him love me and protect me and all that shit he spewed, I'd just be trading one abuse for another. He'd use me, dump me, and I'd be worse off for it. I'd be shattered. Take me home, I demanded. He blinked, but didn't move otherwise. I unlocked my door, yanked the handle, and pushed my door open, jumping out. I'd walk then. Fuck you. Slamming the door, I heard his open on the other side, and he'd rounded the car and stopped me in my tracks before I even made it to the tailgate.
Why are you afraid of me?
He barked, backing me up. Why did you tell me that story? I retorted.
Why do you think?
To prove again what I already know? I yelled, that Thunder Bay boys always get away with it. I stopped, and so did he.
You think Edward McClanahan got away with anything?
He fired back. I didn't give a shit about Edward McClanahan. I just wanted to go home.
I told you because I like this place, he finally answered. I wanted you here with me because...
He searched for words, his hand shooting to his hair and gripping it.
Because we want what we want, Em. Jesus.
Take me home.
He inched in, his eyes on fire.
No.
I chuckled once, aghast. Was he kidding? This isn't happening, I spat out, getting back in his face. I'm not going to be the one all over you in the school hallways tomorrow in front of everyone. I'm something dirty you hide.
Speak for yourself, he growled. I think you're the one ashamed of me. That you want me. That you want this.
I laughed. And who told you that? Your secret society of date rapists who advised that me walking away from you the last 15 times was a signal? And I held up my hands, doing air quotes. He snarled and advanced on me, but then backed away and turned around. He ran his hands through his hair again, and I could see him breathing hard, the vein in his neck bulging.
I would never stop touching you, he said, his voice almost tired, and I would touch only you.
He turned and looked at me, and he was so beautiful I wanted to believe him. Raindrops started to fall again, lightning flashing across the sky, followed by thunder cracking overhead. Out of all the boys in school, Will was the biggest threat, not because he was handsome or because he was one of the only ones who was ever somewhat interested in me, but because he never gave up. Deep down, I loved that. Because I was going to be an effort for anyone, and he wasn't easily discouraged. Right now, I wanted him to pick me up. But instead, I circled the truck and climbed in the driver's side, immediately locking the doors. If he wasn't driving me home, I'd drive myself. Rain tapped against his window, and I watched him come around and stand there, a glint in his eyes at my challenge. I waited for him to try to stop me, but he didn't. Shifting the truck into gear, I punched the gas and sped off, pulling a quick U-turn as a tire screeched against the pavement. I sped past him and headed out of the parking lot, not even taking one last look in my rearview mirror. I turned onto the dark road and pressed the gas pedal to the floor, speeding back to Thunder Bay and gripping the wheel like it was his damn neck. Who did he think he was? Did every girl just roll over and thank her lucky stars for his attention? Is that where he got such confidence? I just wanted to go home, study, graduate, and leave this town. I didn't want anything else. Ugh, I growled, turning up the radio and inching up in my seat because I could barely reach the damn pedals, and it was too dark to try to figure out how to adjust the seat in this stupid truck. God, where did he get off? He's all like, hey, babe, I'm insert hair flip and surfer boy tone.
Will Grayson, should we, like, maybe get together and mate? We can totally honeymoon in Hawaii. I'll put a stamp in your passport and make all your dreams come true.
Which, of course, we wouldn't need our passports because Hawaii was still in our own country. I growled under my breath, breathing hard as rain fell harder, blurring the road in front of me. I turned on the wipers, my brain calming a little. Okay, okay. He wasn't that dumb. He wasn't dumb at all. He would know Hawaii was in America. And he didn't say like and totally. I hooded my eyes, sighing. And he could be kind and sweet. I hesitated a moment, watching the rain really come down now before I slowed on the empty highway and pulled another U-turn, heading back to him. He was persistent to the point of exhaustion, but I couldn't let him walk home in this. I couldn't do that to him. Speeding back to the cove, I turned into the parking lot again and spotted him kicked back on a parking stump, hood up and ankles crossed. I pulled up next to him, rolling down the window. He peered up at me, batting his eyelashes against the rain. I really don't like you, I said, nice and loud so we were clear. He smiled and pushed himself up, coming up to the truck and climbing up on the step, peering down at me.
I like that you don't like me, he taunted.
He pushed his hood off, and I watched streams of rain cascade down his face. So I'm a challenge, then? I asked. That's what all this is really about?
No. He shook his head. You just make me want to be...
better. I rolled my eyes at the cliché statement. But he paused a moment.
More, he finally said. No one ever expects more from me.
I studied him, not having anything to say to that.
I looked down at the phone in his hand instead. Is someone coming to get you already?
No. He stuffed the phone in his pocket. I was getting ready to call your brother to report my stolen car.
I widened my eyes and almost screamed, but I just clamped my mouth shut and gritted my teeth. Son of a bitch.
Scoot over, he said.
I huffed and crawled over the console into my seat, and he opened the door, climbing in.
Can I pick you up for school Monday morning?
He asked, turning onto my street. I unfastened my seatbelt. No.
I just asked to be nice, he said in a stern tone. I'm picking you up. I don't like you walking.
Please. I shook my head, ready to plead. Please don't. We approached my house. I grabbed my bag and flute off the floor. Stop here, I told him.
I'm not afraid of your brother, Em.
Please just drop me here, I bit out. Stop the truck, Will, please.
Okay.
He quickly pulled over to the curb, sliding behind Mrs. Costa's Buick. I opened the door, but he grabbed my hand. I looked at him over my shoulder.
I'll be right here, he said, at 7.
I stared at him for a moment, wondering if saying no again would do any good, but I just took my stuff and jumped down from the cab. I met his eyes once more before I closed the door and then jogged down the sidewalk, turning up my walkway. I looked around for anyone who might have seen us, but thankfully it was late and the street was quiet. I climbed my steps and twisted the door handle, my heart dropping a little because that meant Martin was still up. I stepped inside and heard Will's truck finally pull off, breezing past my house. I closed and locked the door, my lips twitching with a smile. He actually waited until I was inside to leave. Dishes clanked in the kitchen, and I dropped my bags to the floor, heading in to face the music. I had no idea how late I was, and I hadn't checked my phone for missed calls. Hands in my jacket pockets, I stopped just inside the dark kitchen. Martin stood at the sink, pre-washing dishes before loading them into the dishwasher. He turned his head, eyeing me over his shoulder.
Dinner is there.
He gestured to the plate on the table. But I rushed up to his side instead, taking the plate out of his hand. I can do it. You worked all day. He let me take over, grabbing a towel and drying his hands as he stepped away. I took the dish brush and scrubbed the crust from our breakfast this morning.
You know, he said, funny thing. When you didn't make it home by 10, I tracked your phone.
I faltered, feeling the hair on my arms rise. He could track my phone? How long had he been doing that?
It told me that you were at the Cove.
He walked away and leaned against the counter, his eyes on me.
Funny thing is, the Cove closed at 8 tonight, and when I drove out there, all I saw was Will Grayson's truck in the parking lot.
I rubbed circles on the plate, pressing hard so my hands wouldn't shake.
I support your education, Emery. He told me, your extracurricular activities and your projects, because I want you to make something of yourself, and I know that all looks good on your college resume.
I put the plate in the dishwasher and picked up another one, avoiding his gaze. I wished I was still in Will's truck.
And while you're off playing, I'm working, or I'm here.
He inched closer.
No woman wants me with you in this house. No one wants me because I can never give her the Thunder Bay life, because I'm paying for Grandmare's nurse and for you.
He stopped at my side, and I couldn't stop shaking as I washed the dish.
And you're off playing, he said, pushing me in the head.
I stumbled to the side. Martin!
You don't listen to anything I say.
He dug the tips of his fingers into my skull and shoved again, and I almost dropped the brush.
Is it so hard, just doing what I tell you to do?
He pushed me in the head again like I was stupid, and I fell to the side, dropping the dish and brush into the sink. I waited for the slap, but he just grabbed my wrist and yanked me to the table. Pushing me down in the seat, he grabbed a handful of the spaghetti and stuffed it into my mouth. Tears swelled my throat, and I squeezed my eyes shut, holding it back.
As if we don't have enough problems, you go and get a reputation for being one of their little whores,
he said, stuffing another fistful into my mouth,
thinking you're going to be one of them, thinking you're better and them thinking they're better because they get to play with you like a toy.
Spaghetti flew in my face, dirtying my glasses as he stuffed handful after handful at my mouth, the noodles pressing down my throat so hard I couldn't breathe. Silent tears streamed down my eyes. I twisted my head away, trying to spit it out, but he grabbed my face and squeezed my jaw to open me up again.
I couldn't stop crying as I gasped for air. I couldn't breathe, and I gripped the sides of the table, my teeth cutting the insides of my mouth. I tried to think of my gazebo. If Will helped me build it, how nice that might be someday. Will and the gazebo. Will and the gazebo. The breeze on my face was warm, and the leaves in the trees smelled like summer. But as Martin yelled and I gagged, spaghetti choking me, I couldn't muster another single coherent thought. I couldn't think. I couldn't remember what Will looked like, what my gazebo looked like. I didn't have a gazebo. There was no Will Grayson. There was nothing but this. There was nothing but this.
Chapter 11. Emery. Present. Wrapping the towel around me, I ignored the eyes I felt through the glass and grabbed the clothes Micah had brought, taking them to the privacy, hopefully, of the bathroom. Of course, there could have been a two-way mirror in there, too. Stripping off my soaked boxers and top, I dried my hair as best I could with the towel, brushed with the brush I found on the sink counter, and dressed, pulling on my clean underwear I'd washed out last night and hung out to dry on the shower door. Someone's clean boxers over them, and their button-down white Oxford. I rolled over the shorts to make them fit and buttoned the shirt, rolling up the sleeves. If I had to guess, I'd say these clothes were Rory's, since he was the smallest. I still swam in both pieces of clothing, though. Heading back into the bedroom, I sheathed my knife and stuck it into my breast pocket. I still had no idea how I got the knife. Whoever brought me here might have wanted me to be able to defend myself. But if they didn't want me hurt, why the hell dump me here in the first place? I had so many questions. Turning my head, I spied the wall of antique sporting equipment I'd vaguely noticed but hadn't inspected. Plenty of weapons on that wall. Cricket bats, old blades from rowing teams, and... I walked over, grabbing the shadow box of old fish hooks. Flipping it over, I pried out the backing and set it on the table against the wall, picking out four hooks and taking them to the dresser where Iden had left the bandages. Sticking each hook through the gauze, I wrapped the bandage around my knuckles, fitting the ends of the hooks between my fingers to pinch them in place, while the sharp, curved ends reached out like claws. I bit back my smile, wrapping the gauze around my hand like a glove, ripping it free from the rest of the roll, and tucking the slack into the bandage over my palm. Balling my fist, I lashed out, hearing the claws cut the air. I wanted a weapon I didn't always have to carry. Freddy Krueger glove it was. With my wet head, weapons, and glasses on, I left the room, keeping my eyes peeled in all directions. I passed the secret door and kept walking around the landing, treading quietly down the hallway that I saw Taylor come out of yesterday when I'd arrived. I hadn't heard any more movement above me or in the walls since last night. Maybe it was critters. I passed a couple of rooms, a bedroom, and a nursery, and then I walked past an office before I came to a closed door, quietly reaching for the handle as I debated. I wanted to know which rooms were what, which ones had windows, and who was settled where, but I also didn't want to draw notice. To hell with it. I needed to know. Gently, I twisted the handle, but then I heard grunts from the other side of the door and stopped, leaning my head in to listen. Another grunt followed by a groan with muffled whispers, and I took a step back, releasing the handle. That was undoubtedly Micah and Rory's room. Noted. I trailed around the second floor, finding another dark bedroom with the sheets mussed, clothes on the floor, and a couple of more rooms freshly made up by the cleaning crew yesterday. I stepped into one with a massive bed, an ornate hardwood headboard and footboard, and a large cushioned chair in the corner. Unlike most of the other rooms, this one wasn't white or black. Earth tones and decorative lamps dressed the room, and I instantly felt cozy and warm. If it wasn't already taken, then it was mine if I was still here tonight. I checked the handle for a lock, but there wasn't one, same as Iden's room, and there was also a mirror in here, too. I could secure the door with a chair and hang a sheet over the glass, just in case. Walking to the window, I peered through the curtains, taking in the rundown courtyard below with dead leaves covering the patches of grass, the remnants of a fallen tree, and a fountain in the center of the drive that held a couple inches of rainwater that had now turned brown. It was a mess compared to the inside of the house, There may be outdated decor, torn drapes and peeling wallpaper, but it was clean in here. For now. I left the room and closed the door behind me, trailing around the rest of the second floor, opening every door, every closet, and looking out every window to get a lay of the land. I headed for the stairs to explore the rest of the first floor, but a floorboard creaked above me, and I stopped, looking up to the ceiling. Footfalls moved from my left to my right, the wooden floor whining under the weight of whoever was up there, and I swallowed the lump in my throat, turning around instead. I followed the sound, checking the ceiling for an entrance to the attic, thinking perhaps Will was up there. I guessed that messy room I found was either his or Taylor's, but that meant there was one bedroom still unaccounted for. But I couldn't find an entrance to an attic or one to a third floor. I was pretty good at finding the secret room. I still had one in Thunder Bay, now that I thought about it. Heading downstairs, I inspected every inch of the bottom floor, spying Taylor in the gym again, but I scooted away before he saw me. Walking into the natatorium, heat rolling off the surface of the pool and fogging the windows and glass ceiling, I gazed at the water, tempted to dive in. I was alone, and it had been ages since I swam, but I wasn't here to play. I spotted a half wall about 15 feet beyond the other side of the pool and headed over to inspect. Probably some sort of dressing area or something. As I got closer, though, I heard water running, but it wasn't until I'd rounded the wall that I saw it was showers. I stopped, seeing Will, naked, wet, flexed, and my stomach dropped, and hard. I quickly backed up, dashing back behind the wall. Shit, pool showers. What the hell? Iden was naked in plain sight yesterday. Will was naked in plain sight today. I breathed hard, but I didn't move, remembering the last time I saw so much of him. He had been fit, his body unmarked back then. But before I could stop myself, I peered around the corner again, taking in the sight of him now, years later. He'd changed on the outside, too. I let eyes fell down his body, the soap spilling down his skin and little bubbles dotting his stomach and arms. I gazed, heat rising up my neck as he tipped his head back, smoothing hot water over his hair, steam billowing around his golden wet skin. Tattoos covered both arms, drifting onto his chest and back, and they lined his collarbone and hands, but I couldn't see them well enough to decipher everything. I made out his basketball number on the back of his right hand, his Devil's Night mask on his left arm against the backdrop of Thunder Bay, the cemetery, the Ferris wheel, and St. Killian's easily visible. His other shoulder and arm featured a cascading vine of leaves surrounding a skull. Words written on the forehead I couldn't make out. And the rest of his body was covered in big and small pictures, as well as words, some even draped around his collarbone, like a necklace. I wanted to see everything. I wanted to touch him. He had shaved, and every muscle on his body had doubled in size since the last time I'd seen him, too. I dropped my eyes and froze, staring at the other hard muscle standing damn near upright, long and thick between his legs. My lungs emptied, and he turned around, leaning into the wall with his hand as the water cascaded down his face, and he grabbed his cock, stroking it slow and tight. I gripped the wall for support, heat pooling between my legs as I chewed the inside of my mouth. I stared at his hard-on, and in the not-so-far recesses of my mind, I wondered what he was thinking about. Me? Or her? A whisper hit my hair. You want him? I sucked in a breath and whipped around, swiping my fist with the claws. Iden jumped back, slivers of red opening up on his chest where I'd caught him with the hooks. He looked down and then up at me, reaching out and grabbing me by the throat with one hand and my wrist with the glove in the other. I whimpered. Slamming me into the wall, the showers on the other side, he pressed his body into mine, staring down at me hard. You said you wouldn't hurt me, I told him. I'm not hurting you, he cooed as the shower ran behind me. I'm scaring you. He pressed my wrist to the wall out to our side. And he looked over, studying my glove. He grinned. It's clever.
Staring down into my eyes, he breathed across my lips and sweat covered my stomach and back. I needed air.
"What happened between you two?" he asked. "It's not a coincidence that you're here, you know."
I studied him. Yes, I knew that. It had something to do with Will. "So you think whoever dumped me here is giving Will a present?"
"Perhaps."
He eased his grip on my neck.
"They are definitely no friend to you, though."
Spinning me around, he forced me to the edge of the wall, both of us leaning in and watching Will.
"Do you think he'll protect you?" he whispered.
I tried to jerk out of his hold, but he held tight. Will fisted his cock, leaning into the wall, eyes closed, and breathing hard. "Does he have to?" I asked, my eyes trailing down his body again. "Why are we watching this?"
"You're watching this," he explained. "I'm watching you."
"Why?" He didn't answer, and I turned my head, looking up at him. His amber eyes watched Will, and his brow knit, troubled.
"I don't know," he finally answered. "Maybe to remember what it feels like when you weren't alone, when you weren't the only one looking out for yourself."
He looked down at me.
"Maybe to remember what we left behind, and to remember what we didn't."
What was he talking about?
"Will and I are about the same age," he said, "but I think we were probably very different in high school. He was the talker, right?"
He smiled at me. "I was the quiet one." Now it was the other way around, it seemed.
"I wasn't always like this," he told me. "I was miserable. 6 feet of weakness, fear, and cowardice."
He gazed at Will again as he talked.
"You'll be a doctor," they said. "You'll study that, work there, go here on vacations, spend your free time doing this, marry her, have 3 children, live up there in that house after the honeymoon tour of London, Paris, and Rome."
I tried to picture him as he described himself, but I couldn't. I couldn't imagine him docile.
"Until one night, buried in my books, I saw her."
Iden continued. I listened, but I turned my gaze back on Will as Iden spoke in my ear.
"It wasn't her body or her face," he told me. "It was how everything with her was effortless. Every movement, every look."
Will sucked in air between his teeth, his strokes harder and faster, and the muscles in his arm tight.
"She loved to love," Iden said. "She loved to touch and to feel and to wrap her every breath around someone and hold them with it, because she was an artist."
Everything warmed, and I envied how he described her, whoever she was. What would Will say about me?
"It wasn't her job," Iden said, "but it was her calling."
He paused, and then he dropped his voice as if thinking out loud.
"It wasn't her job," he said again. "Then?"
It was like Will. He loved to love. He loved to be happy. He'd wanted to make me happy once.
"I'd never wanted anything more in my whole life," Iden went on, "and I was studying to be a surgeon who would have gladly cut off his own hands to have her."
Will squeezed his eyes shut, and I dropped my gaze to his cock again, my breathing nearly in sync with his strokes. What was he thinking about?
"Maybe I'm to blame," Iden told me. "In the end, I didn't claim what was born to be mine, because I was a shit 22-year-old kid who knew nothing."
He trailed off and then continued, his voice lower again.
"But later, when I could finally stand up and claim her, I spit on her instead, because every effortless breath she wrapped around everyone else became another nail through my heart, and I couldn't look at her."
My chin trembled, and I wasn't sure why. He wasn't special. We'd all suffered loss. But one thing was pretty clear. She was the reason he was here. Much like Will could saddle me with that honor, possibly as well. A woman happened to them both.
"I couldn't look at her, much like he can't look at you,"
Iden said. My stomach coiled, and he released me, backing away. I turned and looked at him.
"I just wonder," Iden said, "if he ever decided to run from here, would he care to take you?"
He turned and walked away, leaving me there and feeling more alone than I ever had in my life. Will would leave me, and he would be right, too. I stood there next to the pool for I didn't know how long, Iden's words hanging in the air even after he'd left the room. Was Will planning on running? What would happen to me if he weren't here?
Or if he were sent home. Wouldn't he fight for me? I'd left him once. I'd let him be arrested and sent to prison, and in his head, I hadn't cared at all. Maybe I deserved the same. I walked to the pool's edge, descended the steps into the water, and jumped in, sinking my entire body below the surface. The water held me, warm and weightless, and I drifted back up to the surface, floating on my back. The salt water stung the cut on my lip, but the pain filled me with anger and memory, and I knew this was coming. I always knew. I just figured it would have come after he got out of prison, and as the subsequent years passed, it didn't. I got comfortable. Where would both of us be if he had just left me alone like I told him to? I stood up, walking to the side of the pool, as the shorts and shirt stuck to me like a second skin, and tears hung in my eyes. I used to think that if I got out of Thunder Bay and lived my life for me, doing what I loved and inviting only the people into my life whom I wanted, everything would be perfect someday. But I hated everything I had, and loved nothing as well as what I'd given up, all of it tainted from the moment he was charged 7 years ago, because I knew I didn't deserve to be happy. Despair sat on my heart as warm tears streamed down my cheeks, and I didn't even realize the shower had stopped running until I noticed him standing there. I looked up, seeing a towel wrapped around his waist as he stared at me. The air thickened. I almost couldn't breathe, and I was torn between wanting to run to him and run away from him. "Just go," I begged him in my head, meeting his hard eyes with my blurry ones, and there was so much to say. But if I didn't explain, then maybe I wouldn't have to feel him spit on me and throw me away for good. "Please just go." He charged over instead, not going, and I gasped as he reached down, grabbing me by the collar and hauling me out of the water. "Will," I cried. He picked me up under my arms and lifted me up, nose to nose with him, glaring at me as he dug his fingers into my body. Another cry escaped. My legs dangled, and I wanted to look away, but I couldn't. I was frozen, waiting for what was to come. I could see it inside of him, ripping him apart, his lips tight and his brow narrow. But instead of spitting, he shook me hard, growling like he was frustrated with himself more than me, and I broke into more tears. "I'm sorry," I cried. I was so sorry for all of his pain. But when I thought he was going to throw me back into the pool, he brought me in instead, wrapping an arm around me and pressing his forehead to mine. His hard muscle nudged my thigh through the towel, and he took my face in his hand, breath pouring out of him as he hovered over my mouth. "Will," I started. But he lifted my thighs up around his waist and backed into the shower again, slamming me into the wall as he took my bottom lip between his teeth. I opened my mouth to argue, but the heat of his breath made my whole body shiver, and I sucked in a breath, tightening my thighs around him. He ripped open my shirt, and a whimper escaped me as he pressed his chest into my bare breasts and thrust up into me, grinding hard. I dug my nails in, but when he came in for my mouth, I turned away. "Get off," I told him. "We can't." He wrapped his fingers around my throat and squeezed.
"This is how it should have gone,"
he whispered up to me, cutting me off.
"You were a hot little piece of meat, and I know you liked it."
He let my neck go and grabbed my breast instead, plumping it up and out for him as he dipped down and covered my nipple with his mouth. I moaned as the heat of his tongue covered my skin, my clit throbbing as I grinded on him.
"We should have just kept it this simple, huh?" he said, "but you didn't want people to know the shit we did."
His mouth covered mine, stealing my breath as he slid his tongue inside and completely took me over, moving across my lips like I was a car he was shifting into gear.
"Why did you do it?" he asked. "Ashamed of what you liked me to do? There was still so much more to come, but you cut us short. We didn't even do half of everything I had planned for you."
I rocked into him again, panting. "Yes." But then suddenly, he dropped me to my feet, and my knees shook, everything going cold. "Huh?" I opened my eyes. I barely even registered him peeling my bottoms down my legs and taking my panties. "What?"
"Now that you're here,"
he said, grabbing the back of my hair. I gasped as he brought me in nose to nose again, slipping his hand between my legs and caressing my pussy.
We have all the time in the world.
Then he turned and left, his threat echoing through my ears as it took a moment to realize what had just happened. I blinked, locking my knees under me as I quickly closed my shirt and covered myself. Damn it, Aiden was right. Will wasn't an ally.
Chapter 12. Will. 9 years ago. Arian Ashby's having a party, Damon told us, lying on the hood of his car and blowing a stream of smoke up toward the sky. Her parents will be out of town. Kai groaned, and Michael laughed at him under his breath. What? Damon taunted. Are you bored, Kai? Restless? Need a new kind of fun? Me? Kai retorted. Never. I am perfectly content. Loving life. Damon smiled to himself, taking another drag off his cigarette, looking like he didn't believe Kai for a second. The school parking lot swarmed with students, all of us hanging out and trying to soak up the rare, warm October morning before classes started. A calm breeze swept through the trees, clouds rolled in, the air charged, and I looked around for any sign of Emmy Scott, without looking like I was looking for her. It wasn't that I didn't want my friends to know that I was into her, because they already knew I was, but if she got the slightest attention for it, she'd get scared off, and she was already constantly bolting away from me. My eyes lifted, covertly scanning the crowd. She wasn't waiting for me this morning. I mean, of course she wasn't, but still. Pretty sure I would have died, seeing her waiting on the corner of her block for me, but as much as I wished I didn't know, I did. She would never make anything easy. Or maybe she couldn't. Something kept bugging me about Friday night. Dropping her off at her house, I could hear it in her voice when she demanded I stop a couple houses down, instead of right in front of her driveway,